Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we get into a conversation about, what's going on, in the funeral market. Interestingly enough, we've had, previous conversations about, this specific market, and I think the conversation we had, earlier, it must have been late last year, was around at least making sure that people understand, how different policies work and, the processes that need to happen, in the unfortunate event of a death. And so for today, we are talking more on the business side around, players such as, funeral parlors. How can they, regain some of their lost, market share, some of the strategies, that can be able to boost overall business. So to make sense of it all, we are joined by Clinton McDonald, who is the CEO of KGA Life, who's going to be helping us to shed some light on this particular topic. Clinton, greetings to you today.
Hi, Madiwa. Thanks for having me on your show.
So let's begin with KGA Life. We are talking about, one of those topics that tends to be quite uncomfortable for a lot of people. KGA Life, maybe you could give us a high level understanding of what that is. And I guess your interest as KGA Life, when it comes to, can I call it the funeral market?
Yeah, you can call it. I mean, it's got many names, but I think the important thing there is, that it is one of the, it actually is the biggest insurance market in our country. It is a product that is taken up by far by the most of the citizens in our country. So it's a very important market, very important sector. And there are a lot of players and a lot of participants in the market. So KGA Life is an underwriting company. So we underwrite funeral policies across South Africa. We have been doing that for the last 38 years. So this really is what we do. And what makes us a little bit unique is we underwrite predominantly through the funeral parlor channel. So most half of our policies are taken up through funeral parlors that we underwrite. So we spend a lot of time with building good relationships across the country with owners of funeral parlors. And, I think you mentioned, the unfortunate event of a funeral. And I think that that's really where this product differs to most financial services products, where, in what's really driving the need for funeral insurance and for the product and for all the services and businesses that are built around funerals in our country is the fact that this is really, the family's had a passing and there's a grieving process, but it's also a celebration of life. And that's what a lot of people, kind of lose sight of. It's for the majority of our cultures in our country, these funerals are multi-day funerals. It's usually back at your hometown. It's a chance for all the families to come together from across the country. We're very dispersed nations. So, it's a very different, event and a very important event. Sometimes the most important event in most people's lives. It's really your moment, to be recognized in your life. Which if you think about it, puts a little bit of a different spin on the whole, very sad moment, et cetera. And obviously it is sad. But I think it is a celebration. That's how we see it. And that's how our partners see it. And when you look at it that way, to satisfy the need to provide services that really matter is a very different requirement.
So with that in mind, then Clinton, maybe because we are a business platform and we have people that are interested in business models and economics, before we look at maybe some of the specifics around KGA Life itself, maybe we can look at unpacking the statement that you made just now to say that, funerals are probably the biggest portion of the insurance market in South Africa. Are you able to maybe contextualize that for us? How big is this thing, that's called, funeral insurance in South Africa?
Yes, no, that's a great question, I think, and something that all of us try and get a hold of as business leaders or participants in the market. So, look, our latest numbers from a pretty reliable survey that was done in 2021 was that the in-force policy, so basically, so consumers that hold an active policy in South Africa totaled roughly about 38 billion rand annually. So, now, obviously, that sounds like a big numbers, but if you compare it to life insurance, then that's where it really gets interesting. So, life insurance, your typical cover on a life insurance policy is a lot higher than a funeral. You're talking about maybe a couple million rand, et cetera, et cetera. So, and the same sort of annualized number for life insurance in South Africa, bearing in mind that life insurance is mostly taken up by the mid segment, the middle income segments, and up. And it's usually attached to employee benefits type products, et cetera. So if you look at that market, that is roughly about 51 billion. So you can see just comparatively, right? For the funeral market to be even close to that life insurance market, where the average sum assured is more in the 20,000 rand range. So that's a lot of policies, and that gives you an indication of just how big this market is. And bearing in mind that's the legal market, the market we can see and measure. We estimate the market is there's a large portion of the market that still operates sort of informally, and could be as big as that. So this market is substantial, and it's you can see it in the constant entrance into the market of new entrants and new channels. So we always have the saying, if you can't get a funeral policy in South Africa, you must be doing something wrong, because you haven't received the from 1 rand a day SMS from at least a dozen providers, then you're off the grid.
Yeah, that is very true. I think South Africa is one of those markets that is quite exposed to many such products. And I guess that's one of the reasons why, at least for a person like me, it still boggles the mind that we often say that certain segments are actually underinsured, because you'd think that with rates that low, that everyone would have access to some of these things. But before we tackle maybe over or under insurance, the parlors themselves, right? Because one of the premises for us having this conversation is that some of the parlors have been losing market share, market share and things like that. What are they losing market share to exactly? And I'm asking that because it feels sort of counterintuitive. It's not like, for lack of a better term, it's not like people have stopped dying or
That's
anything
fine.
like that. Yeah.
Yes, look, I mean, so obviously remember there's a lot of competition even for funeral parlors against funeral parlors in their same operating markets. And certainly post-COVID, COVID was really a watershed moment for this industry. I think we underestimate as a country just how big a role funeral parlors played during COVID in keeping order. It was an unprecedented event where a lot more people were dying, a typical funeral parlor was doing seven, let's say 7 to 10 weekends a weekend. Suddenly was doing 7 to 10 weekends every single day of the week. And you can imagine the just from like now a business perspective, you're a business owner running a funeral parlor. You've built your business around that those economics, that reality, and suddenly it's seven times bigger, and you've got to react. It's not a business where you can stock out. It's not a business where you can not deliver a service. This is very much a trust-based industry. The funeral parlors operate in their communities, so for them to let families down and let communities down is a very big deal, and it effectively would be the end of their business. During COVID, I mean, it's an enormous effort went into just meeting that demand. And you think about logistically what you need to do to put together a funeral, and to put together so many more. You only have so many staff. There's only so many product providers. In terms of where do you source coffins, where do you source family cars, et cetera, et cetera. There's only so much, you know, and then all of a sudden there was this big grab for all these resources. So they did a really good job in doing that. And then you add in the extra COVID precautions for the health precautions, you know, in terms of, you know, those, what they needed to do on a very short, with a very short notice, what governed and governments around the country, around the world even, asked, you know, prescribed in terms of, you know, from the time the body was collected, you know, in terms of, and then having that funeral, there were a lot more precautions from a health perspective to protect, obviously, people who are dealing with the bodies and also the people in the family and the people attending the funeral. You know, so from that perspective, so there's all these things at play. Now we said, you know, COVID is almost a distant memory in many respects, but, you know, all these policies sit with a lot of, you know, big fixed costs, and you know, a lot fewer funerals, and a lot more competition in the market. You've also got a consumer that's under pressure economically. You know, we know that there's pressure, you know, across our labor market in terms of, you know, employment. Also, you know, high inflation is squeezing pockets, squeezing available spend. You know, so all of that, and then you factor in all the new entrants into the market who are not funeral parlors. So other financial services providers. You've got the retailers offering funeral products, Pick and Pay, after the Checkers, the ShopRites, etc. And then you've got even the cell providers, the Vodacoms, MTNs offering funeral products. All the banks have a funeral product somewhere embedded there. You can literally pick up a blister pack at Edgar's, you know, while you're checking out, that kind of thing. So it's everywhere, right? So this is what funeral parlors are up against in terms of, you know, the overall spend. So and that's important when we talk about customer lifetime value, is to look at that individual, right, and their full wallet, their available spend, and where they're spending it. And that's important because another interesting statistic is that on average, people who have funeral policies in our country, and we've seen there's a big market, roughly have anywhere between 4 and 5 policies. You know, so the question has to be, well, what's driving that? Why have 5 policies? Why 4 policies? It's far cheaper economically now for a consumer to take a policy with one provider, because just basically, you know, if you think about what would be built into a premium for a policy, it's everything from the, you know, the collective risk that the insurer is taking on, but there's also expenses, costs to serve. You know, so that those service costs that are built into that premium, you know, if, you know, to service one policy as an insurance company, to service one policy or as a funeral parlor, is roughly the same cost to service 2 or 3. But if that's split against 3, 4, 5 companies, you know, then consumers aren't necessarily paying too much, and the providers, like the funeral parlors, are missing out on having those other policies, you know, taken up with them as well.
Yeah, it really does sound like some interesting dynamics, you know, that are playing out in the market. And like you said, a lot of, I guess, crowding out that's happening because of all the competition that's happening. And especially, you know, when you consider the typically funeral services geared players that have entered the market, such as the retailers and the mobile operators that you were talking about. Against that backdrop then, Clinton, how does, you know, a player, you know, in that sector actually once again, lack of better words, you know, stand out? Like, how do you compete effectively in such a market? One of the common themes that we explore on this particular platform is how constrained consumers are, right? The so-called strained consumer pocket. And that also feeds itself once again into, you know, this discussion as well. So you've got, you know, that, you've got competition, you've also just got an industry that's trying to recover from a lot of the COVID-19 induced factors that you described earlier on. How does one compete in an environment like that?
Yes, I mean, that's the million-dollar question. And, you know, the funeral market, unlike any other, unlike many other markets, you know, you've got to, you know, begin with your consumer. You know, ultimately, yes, that consumer is under pressure, but still has has a wallet to spend. The consumer is just being a lot more prudent in what gets spent and where and when. You know, so if you start thinking about that, you start thinking about solutions and how you can adapt your business to be more aligned with that reality. You know, and so, you know, what we get to see, and you know, funeral parlors have an enormous advantage over all the other operators in our space. It's a, you know, like I think Warren Buffett likes to, you know, look for moats around businesses that he and Berkshire Hathaway invest in. It's a real competitive advantage. It's really hard to, you know, to buy out. It's hard to emulate. And that is the fact that, I mean, funeral parlors operate within their communities. They're well known and they offer a very tangible service. You know, so whilst the policy is taken up through the funeral parlor, the person walking into the funeral parlor is clear on what they want. Their needs are quite well defined, and the funeral parlor can, in a very tangible way, you know, construct a funeral or financial services product around that need. And have that proximity to the client, you know, so which is really difficult if you think about all the rest of the market participants, whether you're selling online or selling through retail, et cetera. It's a lot more impersonal contact, you know, with their consumer, you know. So that's really where funeral parlors have, and any customer facing business has an advantage. Obviously, in an age of digitization, and we certainly saw in COVID when there's lack of mobility, you know, for people to move and go and visit necessarily stores, et cetera, then the mobile digitization element does factor in. But, you know, if you can effectively still deliver that personal touch, and that's where I see guys like that having, a clear advantage. And if more time is spent on kind of marrying the efficiencies of digitization and you know, where giving consumers more options in terms of premium payments, but still a way to make that experience more personal, because it is a very deeply personal experience. And it's, you know, I think that's really where the win can be. And also, as we mentioned, looking at that consumer as an individual and understanding where they're spending their money, and understanding, you know, is there opportunities for even you as the funeral parlor to help them optimize that, to make it cheaper them for to either pay the premiums. Like I said, if there's opportunity to consolidate policies, that's certainly on the table. I mean, it's you know, on a company like us underwrites policies, you know, through a funeral parlor or through a broker or, you know, direct to market. So at the end of the day, those policies are all underwritten. So as a consumer, I can walk into my funeral parlor and buy a service, which is effectively a policy that will cover the service on the day that the event occurs. I can also buy another, you know, top that policy up with a cash element that I could use for other unexpected expenses, which is classically what's also driving this multiple policy thing. You know, the consumers are in their minds are segmenting, okay, fine, I'm going to take the policy with the funeral parlor for the service. Then I'm going to take the, you know, Old Mutual policy, for example, or the Capitec policy, which might be for, you know, that's just looking at a cash payout that I can use to either cover other expenses, get to the funeral, whatever. All of that can still be taken up through the same provider. You know, the funeral parlor offers those policies as well. I just, you know, I think that more time needs to be spent on, you know, showing the value to customers, or what money that could be placed back in their pockets by simplifying, you know, just simply that.
I feel like it's necessary, Clinton, to just, you know, quickly ask this because of the dynamics that you've just described now. Given the state that we're in, and, you know, specifically just scratching under the surface a little bit more around this issue where you have consumers that have multiple policies, right? In your assessment, the fact that a consumer has multiple policies, does that necessarily mean that they're adequately covered?
That's a very good question. And I think certainly probably would argue that they're potentially overcovered in certain aspects. But I think it leans more towards the fact that, you know, there's different needs for different, you know, of those policies are covering different needs at the end of the day. And I think that's ultimately what's driving that. You know, it's not the only reasons, but certainly most of what we're seeing. And certainly, I mean, and you can see across the four or five policies, those premiums are vastly different. So It's not like someone comes into the market with an extremely cheap policy, and consumers are quickly, you know, swapping out all their policies and moving towards the cheap one. I think consumers are pretty wise as well in terms of being able to really segment in their minds how they want their money, where they want their money spent, the quality of the product. You know, so specifically on Ethereum Polo, I mean, you know, that feels visible every weekend in your community, right? So you can see that service being delivered. So that's why I say it's extremely tangible. It's very powerful. Whereas, you know, if you're paying for a policy and a debit order is going off your account, for example, you know, you kind of forget about it and, you know, you just hope it just goes through. And then, but there's no real, you know, satisfaction from a purchase perspective.
Okay, cool. That certainly makes sense, you know, the way that, you've described it. I would have imagined that you're looking at a situation where, like you said, a person is probably overcovered in certain aspects, but they don't actually know that even with all the policies that they have, that perhaps there are shortfalls in certain, you know, parts, in that process, when it comes to having a funeral. I want to change gears a little bit, Clinton, here, to maybe focus on KGA Life for a moment. Yourselves, business performance, you know, that's what we are all about, right? As Business Day. What does your business look like? And the strategies that you've been describing, you know, along the way, of course, those were geared towards, you know, funeral parlors and others, but have you been making any use of, you know, some of the same, in your own company?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we're the underwriting company, as I mentioned. So KJ Life basically operates a network of over 600 intermediaries across the country. Right, so that's how policies get underwritten. We have intermediaries who effectively segment the product and white label the product for different consumer needs. You know, so we've got funeral parlors who market the product on the back of their services. We've got brokers who market this as financial services. A classic funeral policy with maybe some potentially living benefits. You know, so it's looking at so what role then does KGA play? So we if you think about it, we've got two important role players. We've got the ultimate consumer, who's the policyholder, who's ultimately going to be paying for this at the end of the day. And then you've got this very important component called the distribution partner, who's more than that. I mean, as I mentioned, I mean, they are effectively shaping, you know, the generic product that you have in the background and making it more unique, appealing, and sellable to a specific segment. So when designing a business like ours around those needs, obviously there's a big consideration around, you know, where's the value? How's the value going to be delivered? Are all the participants in the value chain, you know, extracting their fair share of value? Because ultimately, you know, we rely on the distribution partner, and the distribution partner takes it to market. So there's a lot of steps to getting to the consumer, and it all still has to make sense. I mean, the average funeral premium is about 120 rand, you know, so there's not a lot of rands to go around, you know. So certainly from the underwriter's perspective, it's quite aggressive margins, you know, so there's very little room for waste. So when we're thinking about our own business and we're thinking about the sustainability of what we do and the future of what we do, a big focus is on driving, lean and efficient operations that still, you know, are scalable, that are still meeting consumer needs. But I mean, within our own business, we are super strict on costs. We are super strict on waste. We analyze waste on a daily basis. We look at what did we produce in premiums today, and how much did that cost us to do that? You know, so you can think about that. The premium that's coming in, you know, has to cover expenses, it has to cover overheads, et cetera, and somewhere along the lines, we still have to squeeze out a profit, you know. So, being obsessed about cost in our space certainly is an absolute necessity. It's not a luxury, right? Because without that, you won't be very sustainable.
Just from that sustainability theme, is that the only lever for you guys as a business in terms of making money, the what you call this, those margins, you know, with the network of intermediaries?
Yes, look, I mean, you know, insurance has been around for a long time, especially specifically funeral insurance, you know. So if you look, really, the innovation at the product level has been quite muted over the last, let's say, decade or two. I mean, you can dress up the policy and you can add certain benefits, et cetera, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the fundamental product is commoditized. There's very little innovation, as I said. So what does it mean is, like, so all the players have to look at other ways and other areas of value where we can bring through some new innovations and new ways of extracting value and extracting profits, you know. And certainly, if you look at what companies tend to focus on, you know, it's around, you know, service costs, it's around service channels, you know. So we've invested quite heavily in digitization and automation. You know, so 60% of all of our policyholder interactions that happen either indirectly or directly through channels are serviced automatically through our 24/7 digitization platform. You know, so and we took a long time getting there because we, as I mentioned, we still had to make it there should be an element of human service and human connectedness in that technology. You know, so it's the innovations going forward, you know, certainly will still have to, you know, as I mentioned, you know, we need to look at the consumer and the consumer's needs and what's changing in their reality. And that needs to then filter back into our businesses and how we then adapt.
All right. It is a very, you know, I guess, interesting space that you're in. At least to me and everything that you're saying, it sounds like you've sort of taken a fine-tooth comb, you know, to the business model and seen where you can drive, you know, efficiencies, you know, just so that you can make the most of, you know, the aggressive margins that you already, you know, that you have at the moment. Before I let you go, though, one of the things, once again, business performance, whatever idea you can give us, you've got the 600 intermediaries in the network. Are you able to give us a sense of what or how big your customer base looks like? And also, how do you define a customer, especially when you have so many, I guess, intermediaries, you know, along the way in the network?
Yes, all great questions. You know, I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, so we're, you know, 38 years ago when we were born, we were born as the country's first group scheme for a funeral product. You know, up until then, funeral policies were sold one by one to individuals. And a church group, you know, obviously with thousands of members, you know, approached us and said, well, could we not have a product that could be designed on a group basis that could, you know, look like what we today understand as employee benefits, you know, your life and health and benefits that you get through an employer. There's certain simplicity and advantages through that. And that's really where we started. And, you know, 38 years later, we really still embrace that kind of, you know, spirit in terms of looking for ways that we can create better accessibility to our products and better ways to service the market. And, you know, 38 years later, we service, you know, over a million lives nationally, you know, so through the different channels. And, you know, we continue to grow quite well despite, you know, the constrained macro environment. But, you know, certainly, you know, we are extremely optimistic about our prospects for ourselves and our market, for where we're positioned. We emerged from COVID very, very strongly, and we probably now, you know, have moved up in terms of market share probably to around 5 or 6% of the total market, which for a company our size is quite decent. given who are, you know, who we're up against, all the big players with a lot more resources and a lot more product lines. So, you know, from that perspective, we still see lots of room for growth. And it'll come from, largely our agility, given our size. We are the industry leaders, despite our call it muted market share. We are industry leaders in terms of our cost. We're industry leaders in terms of our profitability margins. Okay, so we are by far the leading insurance company in our sector in terms of profitability. And we also, over those last 8 years, kind of our claim to fame has been the speed of our claims payments. I think 15 years ago, we advertised for the first time that we paid claims within 6 hours. So just think about that. From time receiving claim documents to the time it was paid was 6 hours. And today that's down to 20 minutes.
Wow.
So, that's just through the investment in automation and structuring our business around what the customers ultimately need. Because if you think about it, at the end of the day, when does a consumer or one of our customers really get to test the product? It's only once, in that event, and then you get to see, okay, is that claim going to be paid or not? Unlike other products, you might get to, if you're subscribing to a monthly product or let's say a DStv or something like that, you're getting the service so you can see it. But in our industry, you almost like got one moment to shine and then you've got to shine. So we spend a lot of time on that. And obviously today we're market leaders for that reason. And also, as I mentioned, our size gives us a bit of agility, but we really now emerged to become a bigger player in the space. And we full steam ahead with our current strategy, which we believe will have inroads.
So I like the fact that you've mentioned the word automation twice through this conversation. I'm a bit of a geek myself, and AI is one of the conversations that we've been having quite a bit on this platform. And I had said that was the last point, but you mentioned automation again. So I just do have to ask, how excited are you by some of the capabilities that are coming through from some of the AI providers? At the time of recording, we've seen some really big announcements coming out from OpenAI as well as Google. The type of applications that can take in voice, that can take in images, that can take in, they call it multimodal AI. Are you excited, perhaps for a future in which we have digital insurance agents?
Yes, no, absolutely. But obviously the last few years, progress in that space has been astronomical, and it's really changing. It's not only going to change technology, and it's not going to change the pace of technology companies globally, but it's going to change humanity and everything, the way we live, the way we exist. But the trick, like any sort of technology and any sort of massive human innovation, has always been, so how do you, for lack of a better word, operationalize it? So how do you make it mainstream? How do you make it actually affect people's lives in a positive way on a scale that matters? Because I think that's critical. You can have a great idea, you can have a great piece of tech, but ultimately, at the end of the day, to bring that to the mass market and have mass adoption, I can only compare it to mobile penetration. The speed at which everyone got a cell phone on this planet, that's a groundbreaking piece of technology. That was great and was probably floating in some labs, around the world for many years, but if you just measure that the amount of time it took to get virtually a handset into every hand in on everyone's hand on this planet, that was really what made and exploded that technology. And the same thing will be true for AIs. So how do we get it mainstream? How do we get those Tesla self-driving cars to be 90% of the cars out there?
So that's where we end off. It has been a really great discussion just talking to Clinton about the state of the funeral market, more specifically funeral insurance, just giving us some insight into where they play as a business, as KGA Life. He mentioned the fact that they have over 600 intermediaries that they are working with, and over a million, you said over a million lives covered. Yes. Correct. And just also talking about the fact that in a country like South Africa, you have people carrying multiple policies on average, but that doesn't always translate to adequate adequate coverage. And in a situation where consumers are trying to save where they can, advice just around how people can be optimizing payments in that regard can actually go a really long way. Also talking about some of the ways in which funeral parlors have been I don't want to use the word disrupted, but their business models have been challenged over the last couple of years, mainly because you have a huge pandemic that resulted in a lot of spending, but that spending versus the level of business that's there now isn't necessarily matching up. And also at the same time, you have increased competition from a number of either similar players or non-funeral players that have entered the market, and then all at the same time being compounded by the fact that consumers are under increasing strain and looking to cut or looking for the best deals wherever they can. One of the strategies that he was telling us about that they've implemented in their own business it sounds like a ruthless pursuit of efficiency. He was talking about the fact that 60% of interaction between their business and customers is done through some type of a digital channel, just one of the ways in which they are trying to at least, increase the efficiencies, because they have margins that they need to protect. But also at the same time, one of the key things that he mentioned is the fact that unlike a lot of other businesses that you tend to have constant interaction with, when it comes to funeral insurance, this is one of those things that is typically, a once or twice in a lifetime, type of thing. So when it does happen, when the claim, comes through, to use his words, that's their moment to shine. So you need to make that customer experience as good and as positive as possible. So that's where we end off. Obviously, one of the things that we ended off talking about is, the growth of AI. I like the fact that we're tempering that to say AI is great, but it's only as great to a business insofar as it can bring actual value, either to the business itself or at least to the customer on the other side. So that's where we end off. We're talking to Clinton, from KGA Life, just around all of those issues. Clinton, thank you so much for being with us today.
Wonderful. Thank you, Madiwa. Thank you for having me on your show.
So that's it. We're in conversation with the Clinton McDonald. He is the CEO of KGA Life. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.